Welcome back to the Flex Diet Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Mike T. Nelson. And this is going to be part two of our podcast with Adam Glass. If you missed part one, where we talked about some excellent training principles, all about grip training, even if you're not a grip sport athlete, go to the link below and you'll be able to find part one. It's just the episode right before this one. On part two today, we are discussing more on the fat loss body composition side, a discussion of metabolic flexibility. So Adam was one of the very first people that I talked to in practice about the concept of metabolic flexibility over a year ago. So it's great to have his feedback on it and him discussing his results with it. So enjoy this podcast. If you want more information about the GRIP product that is underway with Adam right now, if you're on my email list at miketnelson.com, you've seen all the information there. If you are still interested in getting in on it, I think it might still be open. It just depends upon where we're at and when you're listening to this. You can go to bettergripstrength.com. And that will lead you to all of the information there. So enjoy this part two of the podcast, which again is just brought to myself, Dr. Mike T. Nelson, Extreme Human Performance, and Adam Glass. Enjoy our discussion here as we drop into part two.
Okay, just a thought for y'all, okay? If you're a trainer who helps people with aesthetics, you need to have a year that you get fat and then lose the weight.
Yeah.
If you're a trainer and you help people with dieting and such, dude, you need to kind of throw your diet in the trash can and live like a raccoon for 6 months and then take yourself back through your own. Really feel it's important. And a lot of it to me is just personal integrity. Walk the path that you're about to make this person walk, so that you're realistic in it. It's funny, Mike, that's what got me so interested when you first started rolling out. At the time, metabolic flexibility, which moved into flex diet. So guys, for me, when I first met Mike, I was probably between 235 and 245. Awful diet, but I was like 25 and I didn't care. And I figured I could just do whatever I want. And Mike showed me the core of the program. I got going. I came down to probably 225, felt awesome, had so much success. And I hit a point where some of my clients were, nobody just said it, but the thing that I was getting at was this idea that maybe they would comply more to what I have to say if I got leaner, which for me at the time, I had no value for being shredded or whatever, but I said, you know what, challenge accepted. And I had called Mike a couple times and just talked through some ideas. Over a 6.5 month period, I went from being right at 218 down to 191. The leanest I got was down to 184. And I was like Brad Pitt in Fight Club level lean at that body weight.
Yeah.
I stayed there for about a year. I came up into the 191, 193 range. And then I stayed there for 4 years. And the big thing that I discovered was, number one, it's not as hard as people want to make it out to be if you don't make it hard. But number two, it did give me a lot of insights on why some of my clients were struggling. And the big thing dealt with, it's that problem of consistent momentum versus aggressive start. You can have as many aggressive starts as you want this year. You may not lose any weight at all. It really comes down to that consistency. So for the people that are currently applying the flex diet logic, okay, expand your view of understanding and time. Don't put ridiculous constraints on yourself and say, I'm going to lose 20 pounds by this date. I know that literally every trainer says to do that. But what's going to be more important, in my opinion, is learning to really understand what your body needs and the pace that your body needs it to be. Because maybe your lifting partner can easily drop weight and keep it off. You're not them and they're not you. But I will tell you, there's not going to be a better approach you're going to find, because there's no ending time for it. Mike, I feel like over all the years you've came down and visited, you've seen my application of Flex Diet has basically been a running thing with it.
Oh, yeah.
I had a time that I had to figure out a new way to eat or something. And that for me has just been tremendous.
Yeah. And once the highest I ever got up to body weight was 245 right after my PhD, which my health and everything was just a freaking disaster. And at that point, I would just, the last 2 years, I was like, I'm doing a novice strongman competition anyway. I'm not going to hit 220. There's no weight class for novice anyway, so it didn't matter. And I realized from 235 to 245, none of my lifts went up. I just got fatter. So I'm like, this isn't helping anything. And it took me probably about a year and a half to get my health back to normal again from just being burnt out and everything else. But once I did that, I went from 237 to, I think the lowest I got down to was like 211. It took 9 months. And it wasn't really that hard to stay at 211. And then I realized it just depends on your goals. And it goes back to what we talked about at the beginning. What are your priorities? What do you have time to do? And then are the principles that you're applying, are they actually working? And what I've noticed with clients, and I'm sure you'd probably agree with this, is once you've been higher and once you've been lower and you can decide when to go up and when to go down, you don't really worry that much about it. So now I'm 235. Before I left, I was trying to hit 235. I got to 234 because I know I'll generally lose weight when I'm down here kiteboarding anyway. But there's something about knowing that you can do it, you've done it, that it literally becomes almost a non-issue at that point, wherever you decide to end up at that.
I'll tell you what, and there's a part attached to that that I think a lot of people would do well to know. And it's this: if you're someone and you have never been like just super lean, like for me, when I was a kid, I was a chubby little kid, not a fat kid, especially not by today's standards, but kind of a chubby little kid. Really, I was just one of those kids that like from probably 14 to 15, I looked 100% different in one summer, that kind of thing. But I always had an extra amount of weight. So when I finally did all the work and figured out the process and quit making it so damn challenging and just do it, I reached this super, super lean body weight. And at the end of the day, when I think back on that whole stretch of time, I'll tell you the most important details. Number one, the people who like me did not like me more because I was lean. And the people who don't like me didn't all of a sudden like me because I was lean. And really, for me, when I was getting up every day, it didn't actually change how I felt about myself all that much. So one of the key things is some people have this idea in their head that if they lost weight, that all these things in their life would be so different. And health-wise, that may be true, but I know this, your kids, they love you because they love you, all right? They're not going to love you more because dad's finally got an 8-pack. Right? If you're not getting a promotion at work, you're probably not going to get it just because you finally lost 30 pounds or something. So when you set off to take on a challenge like that, just remember it's still you. So don't kill yourself trying to get down to some kind of body fat level, because ultimately most of your life is going to be whatever you're currently making. It's not really going to change. Like that's probably I think about for women's boot camp sales, out of your three customers, one of your biggest chunk of customers is going to be people that have recently gone through a divorce, unfortunately.
Yeah.
One of the problems you get into is if you're someone who doesn't, if you don't like yourself, you're not going to like yourself more just because you lost 20 pounds.
Yeah.
Like it's so key to just remember that your personal development is not, you are not the way you look. If you take the way you look and you're going to rate yourself on any kind of other attributes, it's not that. Gaining and losing weight, it might not be such a big deal to you once you really get comfortable in how you do it. Now, do I personally believe that people do better when they're at a healthy body weight? Absolutely.
Oh, for sure.
Do I agree with BMI? Actually, for the most part, I do. I really
do. For general population.
Yeah. But even for athletes though, because we've got the phenomenon we have now is we have athletes that their BMI is 35, 36.
Oh yeah. That's crazy.
They're at 12% body fat. So they're very muscular, but the problem is that still is a demand on your heart, on your kidneys, on your pancreas. There's all these other things going. And at the end of the day, being very heavy is very hard on your body. So yes. I don't want anybody to take what I just said and run in the opposite direction and say that, well, Adam Glass thinks you can just be whatever weight you want. No, I'm not saying that. But what I will say is the range of the healthy amount of body fat you should have and what the media tells you are very different. You're going to feel like if you're a man, I promise you, you're going to feel better being at 13% body fat than you will be 7.
Oh, yeah.
I promise. You are, when you talk below that, there's a level of leanness you get and you lose your core stability because that body fat on your body is doing some things. And one of the big things it's doing is it's functioning as a shock absorber.
Yeah, structural fat.
Oh, huge, man. For me, I can tell you, my best deadlifts and back squats are substantially better when I've got my power belly going because it's mechanical leverage at the start of the lift. I definitely did not feel all that strong when I got down into that 5% range. To me, it was not a very great feeling. And it's funny because you look at the 80s movies that we watched growing up, you're led to assume that if you don't have a ripped up midsection, there's no way you're going to be strong, but it's not that way at all.
Yeah. You look at like the World's Strongest Man, right? And granted, these are massive outlying humans, but most of them are not very lean, but they're ridiculously strong. And you talk to them and, I'm sure Hawthor's lifts now that he's slimmed down on purpose because he's changed course a little bit in what he wants to do are way less than what they were before. So again, it goes back to what's your goal? What are you trying to do? I think it's a myth, like you said, that if you're just leaner, everything will be better. Yeah, maybe to a point, but it's not linear. Like my good buddy Ryan, who's been on this podcast before, is doing a natural bodybuilding competition. His show is in, I think, 2 weeks. And so we got to hang out with him right after we left your place. And he, considering what he's doing, really good. But he's, yeah, I had all my bloods just measured. Disaster. My testosterone was like 26.
Wow.
And he's like, but luckily for him, he's intelligent enough to know that this is extremely temporary. And the second the show is over, I'll eventually just go back up at least 30 to 40 pounds over what his show weight was. And he wasn't, I would say, very fat in the off season either. So but you look at him on stage and you'd be like, wow, his lifts must be amazing. He's, no, my lifts are dog shit right now.
I'll tell you, the worst day I've ever had out on the lake on the boat was a couple of years ago. We went out with a couple of friends and they were meeting some friends. One of the guys that was on the boat was a competitive bodybuilder and he was, man, I bet he was probably 16 days out.
Oh, wow.
And he was just miserable all day. He was miserable that we're drinking beers and he's not. He was super miserable that we're eating chips and hamburgers and he's not. And he told me, I'm going to tell you, man, it's just uncomfortable all the time. And it gets so much worse. Like the last 3 days before a show, really trying to be as big of a biochemist as you can, because the tiniest amount of table salt or sugar at the right or wrong time can either make or sabotage your stage time. And it's an insight for people who think that they really wish they had that competition bodybuilding physique. Man, go talk to the competitors and ask them the price they're paying to get there and really how long they get to stay there.
Yeah.
Most bodybuilders that you see online, their whole year is running off of a series of photo shoots that happened with incredibly precise timings.
Yep.
When you actually get to meet those folks, they never look like that. They usually just look like really big muscular people, but normal, like a normal level muscular. It's very hard to stay that lean year round. And it certainly has a tremendous cost.
Yeah. And I've seen maybe a handful of freaks that can pull it off even without drugs, but it's extremely rare. And it's also one of those things where it's different for each person. Gets into what is their personal fat threshold, etc. On both the low end and the high end. Like some people, they start getting into the low teens, stuff gets pretty weird. Their labs start doing weird shit. Some people on the higher side can sustain a fair amount of body fat in all their blood lipids. Everything is fine. Other people get anywhere close to that and their lipids look just horrible. So there's a lot of, individual variation there too. And with clients, same thing you were saying. I often tell clients now, it's like, you can't just hate yourself lean, right? It's like, no. I've had clients in the past do that and they got to their goal and they're like, I still don't like myself. And I'm like thinking, what did you think was going to happen? And then I realized, oh shit, I screwed up and didn't tell them that ahead of time, because they thought once they hit X percentage of body fat or lose X amount of pounds, that all their psychological stuff is going to resolve. I'm like, no, it might get a little bit better. It's great that you're doing, that's awesome. But it's an error to think that it's automatically just going to resolve itself because you hit some magical numbers. It's not going to happen.
Oh, no, and it's so important, because a person who toils for 6 months to get down to the super lean weight, and that was just their goal, and they're like, cool, I hit my goal, it's likely they're going to continue. When that person, when another person toils and struggles and they get down the weight, and then they realize that is the only real outcome, that now you are lean, you're you, but you are lean. Man, if you were expecting anything else but that, it's that the day that you hit a given performance PR, that probably won't change anything in your life either.
Right.
If you go out and you take first place in a state in a powerlifting meet or a bodybuilding meet or an arm wrestling tournament or a jiu-jitsu tournament, or you win a CrossFit, 99% of your life is going to be exactly the same the next day as it was the day before. And Mike, I remember when I was young and just complete moron, I really did think that there would be this level of strength I would reach and somehow that was going to change everything.
Yes.
And in some ways it did. When you look at the people that I've been able to meet and befriend and things, fitness has been a vehicle for that. I'm really tempted to believe that I would have many of the same friends and such, even if I did not reach the same levels, because at the end of the day, they're friends of me, not my training log.
Yeah.
So it just becomes critical. And it goes back to what we opened with, guys. The specificity that you're defining your outcome that you want is going to help you get there. But anything that is not specifically mentioned may not be included. Because if someone said, man, I really want to improve my self-esteem, lifting would be a part of my recommendations of things that maybe would help them, but it wouldn't be the primary vehicle in itself, right? Yes. Like it might be item 5 or 6 on a list of 10 things to check out. It certainly wouldn't be first. So I think that's so key, because in our country, I think that in some ways we've made life so easy with technology and innovation. But we've also made life so hard because of the social circles, and people are now, they're part of bigger communities than they would have in their local area. And it's just so key to understand that a day will come that you may achieve all of your goals and you might be miserable because you assume that achieving all of those goals would change who you are. And in some ways it will, but probably not in the way that you're thinking. You're still going to be you, whatever that means.
Yeah. And I think the older you get, the more you realize that your goals are actually very anticlimactic. Like when I first deadlifted 405 and bench pressed my body weight in a meet, I thought, oh, this is amazing. That was like the big goal I had set for myself. And then when I did it, it was like, huh, okay, that was cool. Nothing changes. The sky didn't part. Like there's no huge change, which was probably a good thing to realize at that point, you know? So it's like, I already know once I pick up the Thomas Inch dumbbell, oh, that'll be cool. But then there'll be another way I want to do it. And another thing I want to do it. And how often can I do it? And can I do it both hands? So that I already know once I get to that point, which is several years down the road, there'll be another level there and I'll be happy that I made it, but I'll be happy for like a day, whatever. And then it just becomes this thing that you did. And that's fine. That's not a negative. I'm not diminishing goal setting or anything like that. I just think that's probably a more sane attitude than expecting the whole world is going to change once you accomplish X. It's the same thing with academics. People email me and they're like, oh, once I get my PhD, then everything's going to be different. I'm like, yeah, I don't want to piss on your leg and tell you it's raining, but it's probably not going to be that much different.
Like we had that talk a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Guys, if you don't know the background, I'll give you the one sentence version. So when Michael was chasing his PhD, there were factors outside of his control that extended the process immensely. Professors changing and such. And I remember that question because at the time I just totally didn't understand why that would help you. Like, I could see that you were chasing it, and I'm not going to tell you to not do something, I just, man, you are just like, you're like a POW with the amount of work these guys got you doing. And I remember thinking, Mike, what changes the day you get it? And you told me that day, probably not that much. You already had clients. You already had successful products. You already were out doing conferences, and you were working with these high level companies building technology. Like, they already knew they wanted you. It wasn't conditional that once you get your PhD, we want to talk to you. And I think that's such a great insight, because it's all in that same vein, that the day that you officially became Dr. Nelson, in some ways, nothing really changed, being that everybody who already respected you still respects you. And the people who didn't like you for whatever reason, it's not like they like you now because you got that piece of paper.
Yeah. And I think I got to the point in that where it was just like, okay, it's just something that I want to do for myself, because I also looked at the alternative was, okay, if I didn't do everything I possibly could, would I look back and probably regret that I didn't do it for no other reason than to say that I did it was something I wanted to achieve. I was probably like, yeah. And so then even talk to Jody about, okay, if I don't make it through this program, can I go to a different program? Would I fly back every other weekend and all sorts of other crazy things, just because it's kind of the old Cortez thing of burn the ships. It's like, okay, there's only one way forward and it's this way. And if that way doesn't work, then there's this way over here. But also at the same point, realizing once I achieved it, it was more or less just because it was something I wanted to do. It wasn't contingent, like I have a big job offer or a whole bunch of other people are going to send me more work. It didn't really change all that much, which I think is something I tell people going into the process. It's like, it just has to be something you want to do, right? So like your goal of grip stuff, it just has to be something you want to do for no other reason than, hey, I want to see if I can do this thing. And I think that's probably like the most sane goal at the same time.
It's funny because that is what has gotten me to the most insane achievement.
Correct.
And that's the thing is, for some of the things, if it just, man, I never would have reached them if I thought that, if I really believed that something else would be attached other than just run it down, because I'd had several of those realizations before I got to that point. And now it's a thing where, man, there's, I guess it's pleasant boringness of it all, in the sense of, I know the next thing will come, the next goal will fall. And the only thing relevant to that is that there's something right after the other one. It's just a continuous line of dominoes to knock down. And when you can really become pleased just knocking the dominoes over rather than trying to count how many you've done.
Yes.
The only limit you have left is going to be whatever time you have in your genetic potential ceiling. Pretty much going to be able to stomp out as much as you want, as long as you can find a way to keep wanting it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the art of goal setting, of figuring out what is it you want to do, realizing that if you've got good instruction and you're putting in the time and effort, that it'll happen. The only unknown is just time. So even down here, it's like, first session on my new kite, I hit a 14-foot jump and I was like, oh, that was pretty good. I'm like, I can easily hit 20, because I felt like I didn't even push it that hard. I have a huge amount more I can push the kite in just my riding, and I know what to do. And same with lifting, right? You get to the point where you're like, I don't have any injuries. Progress is going good. Oh, cool. I'm on the right path. It's just a matter of time. And this next thing will happen at that point. Where I think a lot of people are running around. They don't know what the next thing is. Like, they don't even know if they're on the right path, and they're trying every program known to man, waiting for the magic bean dust or whatever it is, instead of just following a solid set of principles to get them going in the right direction.
I think it's getting comfortable with that. And then the other big thing is understanding. So the difference between, there are things that you can understand that keeps the progress moving, but I want to not confuse that word with a shortcut.
Yes.
A shortcut typically implies actions you do not have to take and you still reach the same level of completion. And realistically, there are very few shortcuts that most people are actually going to be able to use. So what I hope for every one of us is to reach that level of maturity and understanding. A shortcut today can be a massive detour tomorrow if the thought we had was somehow we can shortchange what needs to be paid to get that next thing. And I think that if you can just really find a way to love the fact that today you got one more rep on that set, or today you are up 2.5 pounds from where you were last month on that weight. Maybe your body fat is down 1% and the tape measure is confirming it. If you can find ways to be pleased with that and not wish that it was more, you will do so year after year. And the opposite end, if you're kind of stuck in those things now, there's going to be similarities in your story that we've heard from other people. And the short end of the stick will be, it is just as likely that you will give up as you will get there. They become almost 50-50 because there's a frustration that gets built into always believing that it should be more when the evidence says otherwise.
Yeah, I remember, we'll wrap up with this. I remember one of the conversations I had with you once years ago, I asked you, I said, hey, Adam, of all the people you've coached and helped, has anyone who's made very fast progress, has anyone ever said their progress was fast enough? And you're like, no.
No, literally never. There are times that someone's moving at a rate that the rest of us are saying, my Lord, look at this person's achievements. Yeah. And they are disgusted with themselves,
yes.
Not understanding. That's part of the problem, man, is we just are not able to really understand things until we compare. When I hear people say, comparison is a thief and things like that. Not true. It's the emotion that you connect to the comparison that is the thief.
Yes.
But there's a lot of folks out there that if they would honestly compare their rate of gains and achievements to people that are not doing exactly what they're doing, they might find that actually you look at the 3-year spread, I'm pretty far ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Awesome. Thank you so much for all your time. Really appreciate it. And we'll have a link down here below where they can get more information on the Grip product and any other ways they may find you, or are you going to stay hidden in Texas?
I will be mostly reclusive. However, if anyone is curious what I'm up to at any given time, I do use an Instagram account, Adam T. Glass. There's a little dash at the end. And the thing is there, guys, is it's 99% 15 to 20 second clips. I'm a really good editor. I don't like any video that there's not action happening. So if you're ever just curious, what kind of stuff is this guy into? That's where I put up little clips from here and there. If you have a question and I can answer it, I'll try to help you out. I think the big thing for a lot of people is really, if they're going to learn anything from me, it would be learn the value of some kind of consistency somewhere.
Yes.
I don't have too many other things on the market that's going to show you that much more than that. But I would just tell you, just get comfortable with, get a little bit every day and just keep the days rolling and you'll be astonished where you end up.
Yeah. It's a violent consistency day in and days out. Keep the quality high. And some days you don't even know that till you show up to the gym and just see what you can do. Yeah. And if you gave it a go and it wasn't there, you learn from it, make an adjustment. And if it was great, you made progress. And then you do that enough over time, you'll learn, you know, what's going to be best for you and for your setup.
Man, fun call, Mike. Thanks for having me out today.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And we will we'll talk to you more very soon. Thanks again, man.
Excellent. Bye-bye, buddy.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to the Flex Diet Podcast. Really appreciate it. Huge thanks to Adam Glass for coming on here for part one and part two. Always enjoy talking to Adam and getting all of his wisdom. As the Grip product is going on right now, you can get more information via bettergripstrength.com. That'll put you onto the newsletter with all of the information you have. You can always just hit reply there. Either myself or Adam will get back to you as soon as possible. If you have any questions, if you're listening to this episode and you found us later on, We'll try to update some of the links here also. But it's going to be a super great product. Very excited for it. And not only is Adam amazing at grip stuff, he is very good at explaining and teaching it, which I find to be quite rare. So check that out. Big thanks to Adam once again. Check out all the crazy stuff he's doing on his Instagram over there. Anything I can do for you, things you want to see on the podcast, please hop onto the newsletter list, which is free. Insider list. Thank you so much for listening. Really appreciate it.
I have a good mind to go home.
You had a good mind, you wouldn't be here in the first place.